Today, I'm excited for many, many reasons, but one is start back into Jesus' Sermon on the Mount. Now, remember way back, we went over chapter 5 of this great sermon that Jesus gave, and so today we're going to start in chapter 6, the middle third of this sermon. But I do have a couple things I want to mention here, and I almost hate to do this, all right? It's so nice outside. Weather is favorite time of year, okay? But I want you to start thinking about something. Christmas. It's true, all right? It's coming, right? Oh, it's always coming, right? But here's what I want you to start thinking about, all right? Advent begins the first week of December, all right? And I'm grateful to God, you know, coming into my second year now, that I'm starting to think about Christmas ahead of time, all right? So if I'm going to start thinking about Christmas, I want you all to start thinking about Christmas too. And what I want you to start thinking, praying about is reaching out to our community in this time, all right? I think more than any other season, Christmas, Advent, people just, because of our culture, we have opportunity to share our lives, to share our church, to share the good news. And that's what Advent's all about. Jesus is coming. Jesus came. And there's good reasons why he came, and it's exciting, all right? So again, let's start to, even now, I know it's tough. I'm not there at all yet, but start praying. You know, maybe we can, as I get things put together, you know, we can put an ad in the paper, we can start to advertise, tell our people around us about it. The 6 weeks prior to Advent, because we'll be done with chapter 6 here. And I think what I want to do is kind of look into the Old Testament and for 6 weeks kind of show different ways that in the Old Testament, God's plan was Jesus. From the very beginning, in fact, it was Jesus. And so Advent didn't come out of nowhere, all right? The Jews should have seen. And so I'm kind of excited about that too. I'm just seeing how God has been working. He's working from the very start for us. He's for us. And the world needs that kind of hope. It really does. So, again, I don't want to get you bummed about winter yet, but don't think about it as winter. Just think about it as Christmas. If you can separate the two, that'd be great. All right? But let's start gearing ourselves in that direction. Together we can do this. Okay. Sermon on the Mount. Now, again, if you don't recall, chapter 5, you know, if you remember, starts off talking about the character of a Christian. Blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are the merciful. Blessed are the, you know, the meek and the hungers and thirsters for righteousness. Okay, so talking about character, the true disciple. And then chapter 5, then Jesus speaks of the influence of these true disciples. Okay, with these people with this kind of character, these kinds of people then have a purpose of salt and light. And then the last part, we are really challenged by a heightened definition of what righteousness is. That it's not just a surface thing. It's not just obeying a letter of a law, but it goes right to the depths of our very hearts. And the standard is high. So it's beyond the notion of simply intent or the mind. But it goes right to our motives in the secret, hidden places of our hearts. Some of those tender places that we don't want poked. But now into chapter 6, Jesus continues talking about righteousness. That first verse, in fact, if you have a Bible, you probably should get yourselves there. Matthew chapter 6. That's where we camp most of the time here. But it says, "Beware of practicing your righteousness before other people in order to be seen by them, for then you will have no reward for your Father's in heaven." So he continues this idea of righteousness. In fact, this first verse is a thesis for verses 2 through 18. Okay, so he's going to talk about what this means, what he means by this, about practicing your righteousness before other people. This word righteousness in chapter 6 is the same word he uses in chapter 5. If you look in verse 6, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. We want that righteousness. And in verse 20 of chapter 5, he mentions it again. For I tell you, unless your righteousness exceeds the scribes of the Pharisees, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Okay, so he's speaking of this moral rightness before God. That in ourselves we are not right. But with Christ we can be made right. We are right. And that is righteousness here. So in chapter 6 there's a little bit of a shift in the emphasis here. Okay, same word, same general idea, except in 6 then he moves from the idea of you know, kindness and purity, honesty and love to the practice of righteousness. And he gives 3 examples, giving, praying, and fasting. Okay, so this idea, in fact, some of your Bibles may even make a distinction in how it says it. You know, beware of practicing your righteousness before other people. In the RSV, it says practicing your piety. Okay, the idea of more of the religious action aspect of righteousness. He moves from our the moral to the, quote, religious. Now, whenever we start talking about religion, for some folks, it's a problem, right? Religious means, you know, outward appearances and all these different things. But for Jesus, there's 2 aspects that are always there. And we shouldn't try to separate them. The moral, inner righteousness of our heart and our condition of ourselves. But there is that practice, the idea of what we do. And what we do is important. We are to be different. Just as we're different in our moral fortitude of what it is to be a Christian, we are to be different from the world, from even the religious establishment of our churches in what we do and how we do it. It's not just the external manifestation, but also the secret things of the heart. And they're both important. They're both very important. So as I mentioned, 6:1 serves as a thesis to what we're going to be talking about the next 3 or 4 weeks. And Jesus makes a transition from moral to the religious. So we want to make sure we're looking at that too. So there's 2 things I want to do today, kind of as an introduction to get the basis of where we're moving in the rest of the sermon. Okay, 2 things. First, I'm just give 6 kind of fairly quick observations about this thesis. What does it mean then? What are the implications of beware of practicing your righteousness before other people in order to be seen by them and no reward from God, from our Father in heaven? Okay, so 6 just general observations to move us into the rest of the sermon. And then 2, I do want to take a quick look at a particular issue that comes up implied in the thesis and then is fleshed out more in the sermon. Okay, so that's what I want to go for us to really think and get our minds moving in the same direction as the text, okay? That's what we're going to do today. So let me pray as we go forward. Father, I'm grateful to you for how good you are. And Lord, I pray now that as we look into your word, your very word that you gave to us, help us to hear. God, help me to be clear. Help me, Lord, to speak and to say what you would want for us, for Trinity Evangelical Free Church, for each person that came in today, not by any accident, God, but by your will. We are here, and we want to hear from you. Lord, if there be any cloudiness in my speech, any error in the things that I've been thinking about, God, I pray you would erase that from the people's minds, but that we'd hear from your words on what it is to practice our faith in our world today. Help us, God, I pray in Jesus' name. Amen. All right. Beware. Beware of practicing your righteousness before other people. 6 quick things I want to look at. Okay. As we think about this idea of practicing our righteousness and being careful about it. 1, when we're talking about this practice, our goal, our intention, our focus is that we must impress God alone. Okay. God is the one who we are seeking and desiring to please here, not other people. In the 3 examples that Jesus gives, he uses the same pattern. He says, when you pray, and when you give to the needy, and when you fast, he's warning us to not be like the hypocrites. And in fact, hypocrisy is the issue that I want to talk about at the end here, because it's a big deal. And in these examples Jesus gives, it's a big deal. We don't want to be like those who put forth a good show, but inwardly, in our hearts, are something else. And the great temptation in the Christian life is to want to seek the praise and the recognition of other people. And that's the same for anybody. That's human nature. We like it. If someone gives us a compliment, if someone says, hey, good job in your work, I mean, how far does that go? The boss says, hey, that was a really good thing you did there. I appreciate that. It goes a long ways. Our soul, the way we were even put together, the way God made us, has us respond to that in a positive way. And the unfortunate thing is that it can become very self-centered and self-seeking. And God's saying, get it off of there and to where it should probably be, and that is God and God alone. Every religion has that danger of falling into hypocrisy. And like I said, that's the issue I really want to hit on at the end here. But for the follower of Jesus, the true disciples, true purity, pure piety, true practice of religion is in pleasing God, recognizing that our every thought, our every deed, everything is laid bare before God anyway. And in the end, it's His approval that matters. Him and His alone. Okay? So, we must impress God alone. And the question then is, what is our motivation? Where is our heart in doing these things? Easier said than done, I know. Number two. Jesus' warning here does not preclude or exclude public acts of righteousness. Now again, if and I'm sure you maybe have thought, wait a minute, didn't we just hear in chapter 5, let your light shine for others? You know, that we don't take a light and put it on a basket, but on a stand so that it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others so that people may see your good deeds and give glory to your Father in heaven. So is this telling us to do the opposite? Which is it, Lord? Do you want me to stand up on a hill and so people can see what I'm doing? Or am I supposed to go in the closet and pray? Am I supposed to, you know, give to people in needy and not have people see? What we're talking about here is not two different things or exclusion. Okay, we got to make sure we understand that. The concern here is not the actions we do, but, again, comes back to the motives of our heart. The key difference in the two was when he talks about shining our light for others so that they see our good deeds. Why? Why do we want people to see our good deeds? To give glory to our Father who's in heaven. That is the key. That is what's so important here. So if we are doing these things so that people can see me, God says, no. Better than you just make it a secret and then nobody knows because the one who matters sees it. 6:1 here reminds us of how easy it is to justify our own desires to press others as being a light, right? It's easy to justify flashy outward acts of righteousness to say, hey, I'm being a light to the world. Look at me. I'm being a light to God. It comes to our hearts. It comes down to our hearts. In fact, when you get right down to it, everything we do should be for the glory of God, right? Keep your finger there. But if you go to Romans chapter 14, Paul says it very clearly, and I love this. In verse 6 of chapter 14 of Romans, now brothers and sisters, if I come to you, what? Oh, that's 1 Corinthians. That didn't make any sense at all. There we go. You know, some pastors mark these things ahead of time. All right, chapter 6. Chapter 14, verse 6. The one who observes the day observes it in honor of the Lord. The one who eats in honor of the Lord, since he gives thanks to God. So he's talking about passing judgment on other people. All right? You know, and so he says, if we eat, you know, we eat, we do it for God. If we observe a day, you know, if a holiday or a feast or whatever, we do it for God. While the one who abstains for God. None of us lives to himself and none of us dies to himself. For if we live, we live to the Lord. If we die, we die to the Lord. So then, whether we live or we die, we are the Lord's. So we do everything. Everything is for the Lord. And we don't pass judgment on others because of it. And then if you go to 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 31, could not be clearer. Well, 10:31. So whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do all for the glory of God. Do everything for the glory of God. Whatever it is, your work, when you're driving down the street, do it for the glory of God. When you eat your supper, do it for the glory of God. It's a mindset. It's an attitude of our hearts that, you know, I've been thinking about this last couple weeks too, how, again, because we're human, you know, we tend to have these parts of our life, right? So here's my work part, and my husband part, and my father part, and, you know, and my camping part and all these parts, and we kind of shove it all in and try to get it into our lives. And sometimes one of those parts is God, you know, my God part. And what this is saying is, no, how it should be is, instead of all these parts fitting in my life, my faith is everything. And all these parts fit into there. And it's a shift in thinking that all we do, everything, it's all about Him. And everything's about Him. Because He saved us, because He's God. Many people practice religion without paying any attention to God. It's easy to do. You can look great and not have God be part of the equation at all. And so this warning is here to have us search our motives. What are we really, really about in these things? Number three. Jesus demands practice, not just theory. He demands practice, not just theory. Jesus is not satisfied that we claim that we agree with something in our heads, that I give verbal assent. Yes, I think it's a wonderful thing to not murder or not cheat on my wife or give to the needy or prayer. What does James tell us? What good is it if I say to someone who needs help, peace be with you, go and be well fed, and I don't give them something to eat, right? I mean, that's the whole idea. Jesus is not satisfied with theory alone. Again, I think because of our, well, lots of reasons, you know, our culture and individualistic and all those kind of things. We want to compartmentalize and we like to separate things. And really the culture, especially when the Bible was written, this idea of separate stuff and, you know, it wasn't there. Things are pieces and it was unthinkable. You don't break these things up like we want to do to justify ourselves. So we want to break up practice and theory and make them separate things so I can go and do this and you can go do that and somehow maybe it'll all work out. No. It's all one thing, and we don't have to, and we should not, try to separate them. So Jesus wants our practice, not just the theory of things. Okay, number four, this principle of secrecy, okay, of doing things in secret for God alone, applies to all of our acts of righteousness, not just simply what's listed here, okay? Jesus gives this example of three, and that was kind of a common teaching kind of technique, okay? He talks about giving and prayer and fasting. Those are three common pillars of religion, right? But it does not exclude anything else that we want to do in practice for God. All right? This is not the definitive, exhaustive list of acts of righteousness. And so this idea of being careful of our motives, on our desire to look good, this principle should apply to those things too. Observation five. This is a good one. I like this. Jesus promises eternal reward for those who seek to please God rather than the world. That's an interesting thought, isn't it? You know, those who seek and receive the admiration of others, we're going to see, they got the reward. They're getting what they want. All right? The thing, that's it. And then they're done. And they're missing out on the eternal things. It's really a call to an eternal perspective. You know, that we want to seek to please God. Now, the question that comes to my mind, I always think about this, is it okay to be motivated by reward? There are some I know who think, you know, the most pure form of service to God is completely selfish. That I'm just doing it for no reason at all other than God. And yet, over and over in Scripture, Jesus talks about, the apostles talk about reward, crowns, inheritances. And in fact, too often I think we focus our lives, that we think the gospel primarily tells us about what we're not going to get, right? Come to Jesus, then you won't go to hell. You won't die. You won't have to face God's wrath. And we forget about all the things that the gospel gives. If you remember last week, I quoted the great theologians, the Newsboys. Remember that, right? You remember the lesson? When we don't get what we do deserve, it's a beautiful thing. And when we get what we don't deserve, it's a beautiful thing. Mercy and grace. And it's all part of it. It's exciting. So it's okay to be motivated to think about the rewards, because God has great things for us, not just what we're going to avoid, but what we are going to get. We are going to get so much. It's almost unbelievable. And yet we're willing to trade
that for praise from men and women. I want to look at, I want people to tell me how good I am instead of an inheritance. What do we get? What is our inheritance? I had to get in here, right? Romans 8. Heirs of God and fellow heirs with Christ. Are you kidding me? We get everything. We get everything. Worlds, galaxies. It's ours. Can you picture that? Can you imagine? We get God Himself. We get to be with Him. We get perfect fellowship with Him. We get a new body. We are resurrected. You know, sometimes I think we're get kind of out of whack when we talk so much about heaven. Honestly, the Bible does not talk much about heaven at all. You know, Jesus talks about, okay, it's the thief, you'll be with me in paradise kind of thing. But the focus of what Jesus came for and the picture that He gives us is resurrection. Our hope is in a resurrection. Our hope, what we look forward to, what we long for, what we desire, what God's going to give us, isn't just this disembodied state, but a new body, a new heaven, a new earth, solid things. That's a wonderful thing to have and to look forward to. And it's okay then to think of these things in our eternal perspective, to know that God will reward us in those things. Number 6. Jesus defines true religion differently than the world and sometimes even the church does sometimes. Because we have to look at if it's possible to give to the needy, to prayer, to fast, and have the wrong motives, then maybe we need to reevaluate and think about our religious values. Religion is, of course, you know, all the stuff that Jesus is talking about, his focus, he's really hammering at the Pharisees. And everything they were doing was so focused on looking good, on wanting to look good. You know, and it's so easy to, those Pharisees. But, man, do we not do the same things? Don't we make judgments? We see a person, if they don't dress quite the way we think the way they should, if they don't do all the same activities that we think they should, and we're easy to point a finger and say, they're not doing what's right. We should pray and fast and serve the needy because we love God. Again, it comes to the heart and motivation. So we should do those things, but in the proper perspective, and not to convince anyone, including ourselves, that we love God. And that is where the rub is, I think. It's so easy to slip into a place where we want to earn something. We want God to approve. And so I remember I was challenged. I was in Bible college, and I there was this one guy on my floor, Jeff. And we had a little prayer room upstairs, it was a little room, it was dark and cushy carpet. It was a great place to take a nap, honestly. But, and he would go in there like every morning at 4 o'clock in the morning and pray for like 2 hours, right? And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I got to do that because obviously God would really love that. And I want God to love me, so I'm going to try. And again, that's how I discovered it was a good place to take a nap. Because no matter what I did, I'd sit there for a while and next thing I'm out. But it was because I wanted God to approve of me. I wanted Him to love me, and I thought if I could do these things, God will approve of me more. I want God's approval more. It wasn't necessarily because I loved God. No, I loved God. But my heart was not in the right direction here. And a person can pray for 6 hours a day and have nothing, and the person who prays 10 minutes a day and truly loves God and does it just to please Him and Him alone, they're in a way better place in their life with God. And so we have to be careful. And that's what this warning's about, all right? About this idea of practicing a righteousness so others, including ourselves, will see. You see what I'm getting at here? Sometimes it's not the crowd that we're trying to please. It's the mirror. It's me. Right. I want to look good to me. I want to think that what I'm doing is making God happy so that I'm better. And in the end, that may be my reward right there. Instead of seeking, really, truly seeking God in these things. Which then brings me to this issue of hypocrisy. I've really been thinking about this week. It's been heavy on me, I got to tell you. This I mentioned earlier, you know, that there is this natural, I think, temptation to want to seek praise from others. You know, and that desire, that maybe sometimes a felt need for acceptance even, can lead itself to hypocrisy. And you really, like, this is the bane of religion. This discrepancy then between our outer appearance and our inner life. And if we're not careful, then we put up the side. I mean, literally, that's what hypocrisy really was. It was talking about the theater, about acting. You know, so you put on a mask and putting forth something for people to see, but that's not really what's behind it. And if there's a gap there between what people are seeing and what's really in your heart, you've got a big problem. This is a big deal. I was thinking about, you know, what draws people away from God, I think, more than anything? What do non-Christians point to first and foremost, almost more than anything else? And it's the hypocrisy that they may see in the Christian life. When they think or perceive that we are telling them, you need to do this or you need to do that. Or look at my life, see how I'm not doing this, I'm not doing that. And then when it comes out that maybe I am doing some of those things, that maybe I'm not living up the same standard that I am telling someone else to do, and people turn away. Faith is gone. Some people even just stop believing God altogether. They think, hey, if this doesn't make sense, if you're telling me this is true and I see this, then maybe there's no God at all. This is a big, big deal. And that's what Jesus is warning about here. He speaks in these three examples of giving and prayer and fasting. He says, when you give and when you pray and when you fast, don't be like the hypocrites. Don't be like that. Don't. Because it's a big, big deal. I'm ashamed sometimes of the things I think about. Have you ever been in a spot where maybe someone knows you're a Christian? They know who you are. Oh, you go to that church. Or, you know, and then just in a moment of weakness or something, you know, a word comes across your lips that maybe you normally wouldn't say. Think, oh, I thought you were a Christian. Oh, my gosh. Maybe you thought about somebody else. You know, a friend or a brother or sister, and they've done something, and think, wow, if they say that, how can it be true? The Bible treats hypocrisy as a big deal. In fact, if you have a Bible, I just want to quickly look at a few places here. Turn to Old Testament, the book of Amos. Amos, right before Obadiah. So Isaiah, Jeremiah, Lamentations, Ezekiel, Daniel, all the major prophets, Hosea, Joel, Amos, right there. Just so you know, whenever I'm finding a book in the Bible, that song's going through my head. I may not say it, I have to sing it, or as I'm lost. Okay, Amos 5. Verse, I think it's 28. Nope, 21. Oh yeah, here it is. Yeah, 21, that's right. God is talking to Israel. He says, I hate, I despise your feasts, and I take no delight in your solemn assemblies. Any idea why? Why is God looking at Israel and they're doing these things? Good things. You know, their feasts and their assemblies, they're coming together, they're worshiping. Why does God hate it? Because of sin. Because they're being simple. They're on the one hand, they're following other gods. They're doing things they're not supposed to be doing. Dishonoring God's name. And then they come together and still try to do the things that they think are going to please God. And God hates it. He despises it. He does not want this separation. He doesn't want this gap. Matthew 23, verse 28. Talking to the Pharisees. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees. You are like whitewashed tombs, which outwardly appear beautiful, but within are full of dead people's bones and all uncleanness. So you also outwardly appear righteous to others, but within you are full of hypocrisy and lawlessness. Think Jesus cares about hypocrisy in our lives? Turn ahead to Luke chapter 12. I just want to, again, highlight a few things here. 12 verse 1. In the meantime, when so many thousands of people had gathered together that they were trampling one another, he began to say to his disciples first, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees, which is hypocrisy. Beware of the leaven. So think about what hypocrisy does. It's like leaven in bread. This morning I made some bread. And, you know, I'm always fascinated by the process. I mean, you put this stuff in there, and there's this flat lump of dough. And I come back a couple hours later, and it's like, oh, it swells up. It spreads through everything. It gets, you can't separate it out anymore. And that's what hypocrisy is. And once it gets into our lives, it's like it just spreads out. And maybe even those around us. How many Christians have been led astray because someone that maybe they respect or think they're a Christian, and they see them doing something, think, oh, it must be okay for me too. Hypocrisy can spread like leaven through bread. And we see some specific examples in the Bible. I love the Bible does not whitewash people's characters. Look in Galatians chapter 2. This is one of the things I really wish I could have seen. I think this would have been something to see. If you go to verse 11, and Paul challenges Peter. It says, when Cephas, or Paul, Peter, came to Antioch, I opposed him to his face because he stood condemned. For before certain men came from James, he was eating with the Gentiles. But when they came, he drew back and separated himself, fearing the circumcision party. Hypocrisy. And the rest of the Jews acted hypocritically along with them. There's the leaven. See how that spreads? Oh, Peter's doing this. I guess we should do it too. So even Barnabas was led astray by their hypocrisy. But when I saw that the conduct was not in step with the truth of the gospel, I said to Cephas before them all, if you, though a Jew, live like a Gentile and not like a Jew, how can you force the Gentiles to live like Jews? Even the early church, right away, Paul said, we cannot have this hypocrisy. We can't live like this here and then live like this here. It's all whole. It's all one thing. And what's good for the Jew is good for the Gentile. And what's good for the Gentile is good for the Jew. And Christ's blood came so that we can make both one. And we don't want to make these separations. They're dangerous. And I think Peter learned his lesson. Because if you look to 1 Peter, in chapter 2, verse 1, he says this. But false prophets also arouse... Oh, that's 2 Peter. I got it. So put away all malice and all deceit and hypocrisy and envy and all slander. Peter recognized that, hey, this hypocrisy has no place. We need to take it off like a garment, throw it away, put it in the fire, and put on other things. Now we think about hypocrisy in our lives, in our church, whatever it is, it takes on basically two forms that we need to be aware of. All right? One is this a conscious putting forth of something, you know, a consciously feigning piety to hide ungodliness. So we're purposely putting forth an image to people, knowing that, you know, I got this other stuff going on, but I just don't want, you know. It's like, the example I thought about in my head was like, he's like the teenager, you know, acting good before his parents, you know, but then school, they're a completely different guy. I have to confess, I remember being very convicted when I was in high school. I was a senior. And I saw that, you know, I was one thing, you know, with my Christian friends. I go to youth group and I was a leader, you know, outgoing and challenging people to live in faith. You know, but then I'd get with certain people in school, my basketball team, and the things that came out of my mouth, the actions that I would encourage or identify with were so ungodly. I'm embarrassed this day. Hypocrisy. So dangerous. And so, and I was, you know, and I knew it. That thing here, I mean, I knew that I was putting on this mask for other Christians to see, but I knew very well what I was doing over here, and I just lived with it. So we had to be careful. We need to be honest. There's a place for honesty. Now, again, if we think maybe, you know, that's not me, how about this one? Hey, how you doing? Great. I'm super. Are you kidding me? Nothing better. My life is so good. And really, your marriage is a mess, or there's problems, you got financial problems, the truck's breaking down, whatever it is. We do that, right? We skim along the surface of things, and deep inside, things are messy. And people look at Christians, they go, well, or a Christian looks at another Christian, they go, well, their life's all together. How can I compete? That's hypocrisy. If we're honest, if we really get down to where things are, again, as brothers and sisters at a church, we want those masks to be gone away. Yeah. And it's okay. It's okay to be messy, because guess what? I'm messy too. Yes, your pastor is messy. You know, put a camera in my household and you'll see very quickly the mess that my heart can be sometimes. And it's okay, because we don't get what we deserve, it's a good thing. And we get what we don't deserve, it's a good thing. There's grace and mercy in Christ. It's there. So, there's hypocrisy that's conscious. I'm doing it on purpose, and we got to be careful. But there's another hypocrisy that's even a little more insidious. It's that self-deception. It's that hypocrisy that maybe we're not even aware of. That discrepancy of what we think about ourselves and what God thinks. And I may not even be aware of it. It's easy to justify ourselves and our own personal sincerity. You know, I mean, I know, I could say, hey, I'm doing this because I love God. But after a while, some of those motives can be twisted and turned, and I may not even see it. It's the idea of we want to seek to please God, not make ourselves acceptable to God. Do you hear that? We want to please God, not make ourselves more acceptable to God. We cannot make ourselves more acceptable. That's grace. That is what mercy is all about. And when we start doing things, we start thinking in ways, we start slipping into that idea that I want to do more because I want God to be pleased with me. Well, I need to make up for what I did yesterday. I mean, I blew it. So I'm gonna pray 20 minutes today instead of 10. I'm gonna read 2 chapters in the Bible today because then maybe God will accept me more. And it turns into hypocrisy because there's a gap then between what I think I have before God and what God really sees in my heart. And we may not see it. In fact, most of the time we probably won't, which is why we need each other so badly. Other people will much more likely see that. But are we willing to go there, right? Are we willing to drop the masks, to risk? You know, if someone comes to me and says, hey, I think maybe you're being a little bit hypocritical. You think my first reaction is going to be, oh, thank you so much. I love when people point out my hypocrisy. That's awesome. You know, would you still come to me? Okay, because I'm telling you right now, if you come to me and tell me I'm being a hypocrite about something, my first reaction to you is not going to be thank you. I can almost guarantee it. Just about certain. You know, maybe if God's been working my heart already, you're right. I may, you know. But truth be told, we don't like that. Will you love me enough to do it anyway? Will I love you enough to do it anyway? Others can see these things often, we cannot. And love, then, demands that we do something about it. A great quote out of Paradise Lost by Milton. Everyone read that in school? Milton said this, neither man nor angel can discern hypocrisy, the only evil that walks invisible except to God alone. It's an insidious, dangerous thing because it talks about the motives of the heart, and I maybe don't see that or in myself or in others. So we have to be careful. So as we consider then acts of righteousness, and we think about this sermon on the mount that Jesus gives us, let us diligently examine ourselves. Last week when we had communion, we talked about that, how important it is to examine ourselves. Because on the one hand, no one knows better than me, my own heart, and sees those things. So let's keep that in mind these next several weeks, especially, of looking and say, Lord, pray, God, by your Spirit, shine your light. We should be saying, shine, Jesus, shine, right? Shine, Lord. Shine on those dark places of hypocrisy and show them to me. Or shine that light of hypocrisy so that someone else will see it. Make it known. Don't let me live in it. Expose it. Bring it out. That's our desire, to really want to please God and not just be acceptable to God. Holy Spirit, by your working, shine a light on these things so we can be your people. Seek to glorify and please God alone. That is our challenge in this. And as we look at these areas of giving, praying, fasting, for goodness sakes, let's seek to God. Look to seek God and to glorify Him and to do these things. They'll be good. They're good things. And we can be a light, and we can be sharing this good news, but in honest ways, in real ways, sometimes messy ways. That's okay. Honesty is hard, but it's what God seeks in our lives. Sherry's going to sing a song, you know, talks about this very thing. I want you to listen to this, and then we'll have a benediction and be done. Thank you.
So bring your brokenness, and I'll bring mine. 'Cause love can heal what hurt divides, and mercy waiting on the other side. If we're
go now this week in the honest light of God.